Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host today, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, and I'm very excited to tell you I'm broadcasting from the Regis Executive Suites here in sensational Sandy Springs, Georgia. As a reminder, make sure you're following us on social media, Twitter, at Business Radio X. And today we're using the hashtag Atlanta Business Radio. Also, go like our Facebook page and see all the photos of our in-studio guests, interact with us there. And if you have any guest suggestions, go ahead and send us a note there as well. And now, it's my pleasure to welcome to the Business Radio X flagship studio and Atlanta Business Radio, representing the Montford Point Marines Atlanta chapter, Ambassador Theodore Britton, and retired Chief Warrant Officer Fred L. Coates. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
All right. So the Montford Point Marines, this is a historical association of African-American Marines. Is that right?
Absolutely.
And who would like to tell our listeners exactly the legacy of the Montford Point Marines? Mr. Britton?
Well, shall I start? In 1941, President Roosevelt signed an executive order not only authorizing, but opening up all branches of the government to all people, including women. A lot of the black men had been, and women had been, excluded from the federal, the war effort.
Up until 1941.
Well, this also meant that the military also had to open up, and for the first time in something like 150 years or more, the Marine Corps was forced to open up its ranks to African American men. There had been African men during the Revolution, when the very first Marine Corps formed in this country. However, after the Union was formed, African Americans were excluded from it until 1941.
And that's when President Roosevelt decided to take it upon himself to include African-American men and women into all ranks of all United States Armed Forces. Yeah. But the Montford Point Marines, tell us about that, please.
One exception, Dottie. Now, black women were not taken into the Marine Corps until 1949.
Okay.
I don't know. Well, that's one of those long stories.
But I did not know that either. So
1949. Yes, in addition, at the end of World War II, there were 640, maybe 740 white women officers, but not one black officer, Marine officer, on duty. The one person who had been commissioned in 1945 was immediately retired to the inactive reserve here.
Well, there's quite a history there for sure. And it goes back almost 70 plus years now that this transformation took place. And looking at today, we're still dealing with some transformations inside our military. But these guys were the pioneers of it all back then. And it must have been a difficult time, a challenging time for those gentlemen and women, of course. But tell us about the Montford Point Marines. How did they get that name?
Well Ryan, the Montford Point Marine Association came about for the simple reason these Marines, as Ambassador Britton stated, they train at Camp Lejeune, and they named the camp Camp Montford Point.
Okay.
Well, during that period of time, of course, they weren't allowed to train at Parris Island. They weren't allowed to train at San Diego with their white counterpart. They carved out a piece of land on Camp Lejeune and named it Montford Point, hence the Montford Point Marine Association.
Now that's starting to come together for me, and I know our listeners are starting to connect the dots as well. How long was the Montford Point Marine Camp in existence?
Well, Montford Point was in existence from 1942 to 1949.
Okay.
And during that period of time, approximately 20,000 men, black men, trained at that camp before it was desegregated. I will pass this on to Ambassador Britton because he was actually one of those gentlemen that trained on the hallowed grounds of Montford Point.
A quick little revelation. The original name was Mumford Point. I met a gentleman recently who was African-American, by the way. His family had a farm on that site. They were the ones whose land was taken over to form this part of Camp Lejeune. They changed the name to Montford as opposed to Mumford, but that's how it started. And until 1949, it was a segregated camp.
Mm-hmm.
After that point, it was continued, but as a training camp.
Yes, sir.
Plus, in 1972, I think it was, the name was changed by executive order of President Nixon to Camp Johnson, Camp Gilbert H. Johnson, named after one of the early arrivals at Camp Montford Point.
Yeah. Well, why the name change at all? Why did Nixon feel the name to change that name?
Well, this gentleman died, and he was one of the well-known members of the Montford Point group.
I see.
He had been the recruit depot sergeant major when I was coming through at boot camp. And so to honor him, the name was changed to Camp Johnson.
Very interesting. And yeah, so take us back to those times when you were there. What time of year was it when you were there? What was the atmosphere like? Were you excited to be there, or were you intimidated? How did you feel back then?
I came in January 29th, 1944, and went through boot camp. It was not a good time because it was cold.
Okay.
It was cold during the very first part of the morning. And it began to get hot by the middle of the day. So if we went out in our green uniforms, we were comfortable. But around 10 o'clock, we began to feel uncomfortable. The training was tough. All Marine Corps training is tough. They always say that they're very democratic. Everyone is treated like a dog of sorts. But I always felt that no matter what happened, whoever was training us had to go in at some point, whether it was for lunch or the bathroom or you name it. So yeah. All I had to do was just wait him out.
Yeah. So you're back then, it was cold, but you're just trying to survive. You made it through. But then you went on to serve in the Pacific Theater after that.
Absolutely, yes.
Yes, sir. You went straight from boot camp overseas?
I went through some schools training at first. And by July 4th, I was on a ship headed to Guadalcanal. It took us 33 days. We ran out of good food, we ran out of good water, and a lot of other things. But we made one stop, Espiritu Santo, New Hebrides, before arriving at Guadalcanal.
33 days on the ship.
Yes.
Not knowing what to expect. Did you know where you were even going at that time?
No, we didn't.
I didn't think. They don't like to give orders like that.
No.
And then so you finally arrived, and I imagine it was a pretty hectic time as well to be there.
Yes. It was some interesting times. I don't know if you ever heard of a shellback.
A shellback?
Yes.
No, sir.
When in traditional Navy times, whenever one went across the equator.
Oh, that's right.
One would be inaugurated, initiated as a shellback. Maybe a few eggs smashed over your head, and a lot of other things.
An old maritime and naval tradition, I suppose.
Right,
so,
right.
And so then you spent some time over there in the Pacific Theater, seeing some action over there. But then you came back home and spent some time, but then recalled back onto active duty for the Korean conflict. Is that right?
Yes. I signed up in March of 1948 because I expected that I'd be going into government at some point. So, second of October of 1950, I was called back to active duty. Now, this was an interesting time because between 1945, when we were beginning to be discharged, and just about 1949, we were not allowed to be in the active groups. We were not welcome into the active groups. We were simply names on a list as inactive. But with the passage of President Truman's executive order in 1948, I think it was maybe 49, then all organizations had to be open without regard to race, creed, or color. I was part of that, by the way. We attempted to set up an all-black unit in Harlem, and I protested to the congressman while I was a scoutmaster at his church. He got in touch with the Secretary of Defense, who got in touch with the Marine Corps. And next thing, the order came back, all organizations would be open without regard to race, creed, or color.
Mm-hmm. And you were all part of that changing pivotal moment in history here in the United States. Where those who just may have joined us late here, we're talking with Ambassador Theodore B. Britton Jr.
R. Britton, Roosevelt.
Roosevelt, I'm sorry, mistypo there. Theodore R. Britton Jr., and he was born in North Augusta, South Carolina, many years ago, and has been around the world fighting for our country, as well as spent some time in New York City in business, and got a degree from the
Much
New York University.
Much of my time around the world has not been fighting. It's been as a diplomat representing the country and taking care of different treaties and things like that.
That's right. So let's bring that up as well. The title ambassador was given to you by President Ford. Is that right?
He nominated me.
Okay.
The Senate confirmed me.
The Senate confirmed you.
Yes.
Right.
And there are two parts of this. That title is always a little tricky. One is extraordinary and the other is plenipotentiary. Extraordinary is the highest level of representation, and plenipotentiary is the ability to sign treaties, agreements on part of the U.S. government.
Yes, sir. Yeah. And so you had worked your way up to be nominated by President Ford to be ambassador to where?
Well, I was served as chief of mission to Barbados and Grenada, plus a number of other places. But later, I was handling the OE, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, in Europe. And that's, in fact, not only Europe, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, 24 countries altogether. Yeah.
And you held that title, or still hold that title, but you served in that role for many years, up until when?
The title, the rank of ambassador is permanent.
Yes, sir. But you served in that role as yes. ambassador for how long?
Oh, gosh, I'm still ambassador.
Oh, so you still are?
Yes.
Okay.
But much of that work was with the in Europe, with the different organizations, OECD, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, United Nations, oh, some others.
And so you really enjoy the diplomacy, working on behalf of the United States with all these other countries and creating new business and economic endeavors with them.
Yes, I fell in love with diplomacy while on Guadalcanal in the Pacific, but getting in wasn't easy. I was sort of excluded, but the luck of the draw was that later on President Ford appointed. President Nixon was going to do the appointment first, but he left office, and President Ford picked it up.
So you say it was luck of the draw. I've got to be more to it than that. I know you're positioning yourself your whole entire career to be nominated for the ambassador.
I would say that, yes, I was well prepared, and the opportunity showed itself.
And you took charge. And then maybe that's a message that you can send out to our listeners about someone who may be thinking about that career path or making some challenges in life. What advice may you give them about sticking to it and seeking out your own dreams?
Yes. Many people say, how do you become an ambassador? I'd like to become an ambassador. And they don't know the foggiest thing about it. And I always tell them, you want to become chief of mission with the rank of ambassador? Or chief of mission with the rank of minister or something else. But in addition, it's not quite as easy. I said, for example, you might be appointed the chief of mission to Lesotho, Swaziland, or you may be appointed the chief of mission to, say, the OECD or the WHO or something. And I said, you need to know what you're getting into. It's one thing to talk about. One person told me that she really wanted to go to one of the countries and help the people. And I said, that's not your job. You need to be in some other kind of operation, not as a diplomat, because part of your job may be to just be there, but not necessarily to help people. So you got to, people really need to think about what they're asking for.
That's sound advice for sure, and certainly something you have to think about before making those choices.
Yes, and know what you're getting into.
Absolutely. And so I know some of the other passions that are really you're passionate about, some other causes in life, are veterans affairs, men's health, higher education. Let's speak about those.
The important thing is that, to me, the Marine Corps in my early years was a real education. It was a thorough education. That's how I learned so much about diplomacy, about the world, about being in the Solomon Islands, of course, just to know about those and the Melanesian people. Everything was sort of so much of an education being in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, the Marine Corps set you on the path to success at a very young age. What was the decision to join the Marines? What was the impetus behind that?
Originally, I thought of the Air Corps, but at the last moment when I went in for induction, I was offered the Army or the Navy, and I said neither. And being out of New York, because they think you're a wise guy. So they said, what do you want? I said, the Marine Corps. And they were told that their quota was filled. Mm-hmm. And I talked to the gentleman who was the sergeant in charge of it. And he said, let me see what I can do. And he came back 5 minutes later and said, you're in.
Okay.
That was it.
And then you were gone off to boot camp then.
Absolutely. Yeah. 2 weeks later. Yeah.
2 weeks later. And again, part of the historic Montfort-Port Marines, which, by the way, has been awarded the group Congressional Gold Medal. Yeah. Mr. Coates, could you talk to us about that, about what that means to not only the group of individuals, but you as an individual as well?
Absolutely, Ryan. As you said, we call our guys the original Montfort-Porters. We refer to them as original. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to understand, it was 70 years after the fact when these gentlemen was finally recognized for their effort. And in 2012 is when Congress, you know, passed the bill and President Obama signed it into law. And on June 2012, is when they were awarded the Congressional Gold Medal.
Congressional Gold Medal, for our listeners who don't know, is the highest achievement that any citizen can achieve. Is that right?
George Washington was the first recipient.
George Washington?
George Washington.
Who awarded him? I thought he was the original founding father. Of
Remember, it is called the Congressional Gold
Medal. That's right. That's right. The Congress gives it to him. So,
yes, yes.
And so you said 2011, November, yeah. The award was recognized there. And you had a big ceremony and parade up there in Washington.
Well, absolutely. Ironically, the award was awarded in Emancipation Hall.
Okay.
Of all places. Now, you've got to get the connection here. You're talking about African Americans back then, the Marine Corps really didn't want them to join. They persevered. They had to fight for the right to fight. And they loved the country. And that's one reason why they wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. So it was a watershed moment, you know, for these gentlemen. And I was there when they were awarded this Congressional Gold Medal to see that they were finally recognized for their effort. A lot of them didn't even tell their children or grandchildren that they were Marines because they were treated so badly. Mm. So they didn't want them to even know. So these are some of the things that I found out, you know, after them. Of course, you know, they're the shoulders that I'm standing on. So they have opened up the doors in every facet you can possibly think of in our country in a good way. You know, when a lot of them were discharged and after the war was over, civil rights was a big thing. They made a tremendous stride within that to help this country heal and to change the way a lot of things are today. So it was tremendous.
Ryan, my hat is off to Fred. Fred was in the Air Force, by the way, before he joined the Marine Corps. But, you know, although we were pioneers, we were just restricted from fighting for a long time. It wasn't until about Saipan where the Marines suddenly realized that we were needed in the fighting. And the first encounter meant that the fellas got the highest Navy rating for fighting, 4.0, and as well as recognized by the Commandant as actual Marines, not just Marines on trial. But having said that, we paved the way. But those fellas who have taken up the slack since we've been out, Korea, Iraq,
Vietnam mm-hmm.
all of those things, they have really suffered. As a matter of fact, interestingly, the general and the assistant commandant who first sent the letter indicating that all Marines would be welcome without regard to race, creed, or color, commanded the first integrated group of Marines in Korea. But it meant that our fellas who were excluded from fighting in World War II now find themselves leading fighters during Korea and Iraq and other places. Mm-hmm. And of course, as an Iraqi veteran, mm-hmm. you know what was going on. You looked around and it was America on the fighting lines. not just white fellas on its firing line with black fellas supplying them. It was totally integrated. But my hat goes off to them. We have one person in the group, maybe more than one person, who has three Purple Hearts.
Oh, my goodness.
But also people who won the Silver Star and other things. During World War, during Vietnam, in the course of 2 years, five African-American Marines won the highest medal for bravery, the Medal of Honor. They gave their lives to save other Marines and were awarded the Purple Heart, I mean, the Medal of Honor after their death, posthumously.
Yes, sir.
But I sometimes say I'm proud to be a pioneer, but the legacy has been rather brutal and something that I regret at the same time I admire their courage and all that they have done, including people like Fred Coates here, who did
30 years, I believe, 33 years all told.
30 years
all together, yeah.
Well, my hat's off to both of you gentlemen, certainly, and certainly for you, Ambassador Britton, for pioneering that era. And we want to mention to our listeners, too, that your group, the Montford Point Marines Association, is currently looking to preserve the legacy even more for more generations to come through a monument, a memorial you're putting together. And we'll tell our listeners how they can find out more information and get involved if they wish.
Ryan, that's right. What we're doing as an association, as we said before, we want to make sure that these gentlemen's legacy will forever be preserved. So we are building a memorial outside of Camp Lejeune. Of course, this is where they train, Montford Point. It's a $1.8 million endeavor. We've raised about $1 million thus far, and we're in need of about 800,000 more. As you said, when we came here today, we came here from a funeral, and that funeral was from an original Montford Pointer. I tell people all the time, none of us know the date of our demise. We just don't know. So we're trying to get this memorial built as soon as possible, where as many of them who are still with us can realize it and can see it. So if anyone is out there that would like to help our cause, we would love to have you donate to this worthy cause.
And you can make a credit card donation online at your convenience to www.mpmamemorial.org. Just fill out the form on the back, mail it in, go online to find out more information. You can also go online to see beautiful pictures of what this memorial is going to look like. I'm looking at it now, and I just can't believe how nice it's going to be. And I know Camp Lejeune is going to be so proud to have this part of their installation up there. And the wall of 20,000 stars.
That's right.
What is that about?
Well, as we said when we first started, there were 20,000 men that went through from 42 to 49. So each of the star represent those
the
men.
Original.
Yes, sir.
I got you.
That went through.
May I add something
to it? Yes, sir, please.
Some people think that it's just sort of a casual thing, but to the extent that many people who even have relatives who have served in the Marine Corps can make a contribution in honor of their relative. One of my friends who happens to be white, who, when he heard that I was a Montford Point Marine, sent in a check for $5,000 in my honor. In my honor.
And you had no idea he was doing this.
That's right. He just appreciated me. But then again, you know, I have to think of families and so forth who want to remember their relatives, who want to honor their kin folks, yes, and what have you. This is a good time to step forward and make a contribution in the honor of the particular Marine. Or even if he's not a relative, you can still do it for people whom you appreciate.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You can give back to that memorial fund, or you can give back to the donation for to the wall and everything that's going on, and the absolutely beautiful architecture there and the sculpture. And it's going to be a legacy that's going to live on for many years and inspire many more Marines as they walk through that
memorial.
We
hope to dedicate it next July 2016.
And remind
Camp Lejeune.
And our listeners can go to Atlanta Business Radio. Business Radio X. A link will be provided there where you can also go and find out more information at your leisure. And so, but it sounds like from the very beginning, Ambassador Britton, you've been part of the change in America that we are continuing to see.
Having been born in 1925, there's been a lot of change.
Well, some folks either run from it and choose not to get involved. Yeah. You chose to get involved, not only at a young age as a Marine, but then as as a diplomat through the years and as a businessman as well. Yeah. You know, what motivates you and continues to inspire you as we sit here today?
I've been blessed being in this country, as all of us have been blessed, and I've been treated awfully wonderfully throughout. Even when sometimes things look as if they might have been something negative, they turned into something positive. A gentleman I got to know quite well and who really admired me and loved me was a man named Strom Thurmond. During 1948, he was a Dixiecrat candidate, segregation. Years later, he's telling me, anytime you want me, just use me, and so forth. But this has been throughout the Martin Luther King talked about loving your enemies and whatever. And even at the funeral for Mr. Ozell Sutton this morning, they talked about the fact that Ozell never saw an enemy. He always saw a friend. And I always say, I see lots of strangers in this world waiting to be converted into friends. This country is a wonderful country with so many wonderful people. And I've seen so many changes over the time. I hit 90 in October, so I've been around a long time. Mm-hmm. But just to see what has happened in this country, you mentioned this morning about the fact that a person whose precursors might have been in slavery, if he was fully African-American, is now the commanding, the number one person in the free world. This, in this country, no other country, we just have so much to be proud of. And so this is what inspires me. I've been a commissioned missionary in the American Baptist Convention. And I've had an opportunity to work with a lot of people, including Dr. King. When anyone goes on the website or pulls up my name, gets a long letter from me to Dr. King in 1967. Mm-hmm. But this is just some of the things that's happened.
So you just, since a young age, have just been felt so blessed to be part of this American experiment.
Absolutely.
And continue to encourage others to get involved and be part of the process.
Yes.
Don't sit on the sidelines and hope for change without being involved. Get out there and do something.
You said it right.
Right,
you
and be part it of right. it. So, so I also want to touch on your passion about the health and the community. What are some things you're doing along those lines to give
it's
back?
It's called Minority Men's Health Initiative. Minority men have a lower life expectancy and more health problems than majority men. And so this is concerned with cardiovascular, diabetes, prostate cancer, melanoma, diabetes, obesity, and for violence prevention. We really have to do more to help people and to let them know more about health matters and why it's important. Because when your person dies, a male dies in the family, it impacts the economics of the family, but it also economics the society, the stability of the society. So I've been one of the people up at Hampton University and many other universities around the Southeast to try to improve the life expectancy and reduce the disparity in minority men's health. Some things that we can't do much about, many things we're doing, experimental things. For example, Albany State is developing, one of the people at Albany State is developing a handheld device for measuring PSA as precursor to prostate cancer. The thought is that the current measurements are not as scientific as they might been, so this is the kind of thing. And we're working in some of the very poor communities. One was known as the poorest and the fattest community in the country. But diabetes and so many other things flow from being obese. This country is the most obese country in the world. And we're getting we're getting fatter each year.
Yes, it's growing as we speak, year after year as well. Yeah, yeah. So having some way to intervene with some folks, some educational support, or perhaps some guidance on what they can do to help their health improve or get over some of these troubling health symptoms, I can certainly see you're passionate about that. Yeah. And if people want to find out more information about the Minority Men's Health Initiatives, how would they do so?
Well, they can always write to Hampton University in Hampton, Virginia. It just MMHI, Minority Men's Health Initiative. It's, I think we're concerned with about 10 different universities at this point, including Howard, Florida International, Savannah State, Clark Atlanta here in Atlanta, and other places and so forth. Yes.
Yeah, so if you're interested, listeners, go and do some research on that and get involved yourself and begin to give back and to those who have given so much already. And so as we are now wrapping up here, 2015, looking back, what were some highlights for you, both either personally or professionally, or perhaps at the Montford Point Marine Association celebrated? We'll start with you, Mr. Coates. What were some highlights for you in 2015?
Well, 2015, we really got a lot done. The commissioning of the ship, that was done during that period of time.
And let's mention that to our listeners. That was a ship out in San Diego.
Right. It's called the USNS Montford Point, MLLP-1.
Okay.
And so that was a big deal, especially being named after our guys. But, you know, we want to separate the two here, or we don't want to separate the two here, because it's not just about race.
Okay.
It's about everyone coming together, working together, and making everything happen. And the ship, the dedication of the ship, and everything else that we have done over the years, and especially in 2015, was done by a collective body of everyone. I mean, personally for me, I'm in real estate.
Okay.
So, of course, we have seen a lot of transition, you know, this year. I'm really involved in my community. I'm a resident of Alpharetta. I've sat on the board of directors for North Fulton Community Charity. Want to give back in that regards. I've sat on the board of directors for GCAC, Giving Children a Chance, which is has to do with foster care. I have coordinated international mission trip. Really been doing that for about the last nine years. And I do three international and normally one regional. And that's giving back to folks that have less than what you have. So it's been very, very.
It sounds like it. Yeah. And you're giving back in so many different ways to so many different areas of where people need it. What inspires you? I mean, what is the motivation behind your reason to give back so much?
Well, what inspires me, especially with the Montford Point, are these guys. As I said, number one, we know that we owe it to them. And that's a big thing. I know we keep talking about the memorial, but that's going to be the biggie for us. But we're learning so much more on different platforms, getting into the community, getting people involved, getting vets involved, letting them know exactly what they need to do or where they need to go to find out different information, things such as that.
So, and it keeps you inspired, keeps you motivated, and just keeps you moving ever forward to continue to change the world in positive ways.
He may sound modest, but I really admire Fred. The first time I met him, he was getting ready to go off on a mission to Kenya. And he's been doing it ever since I first met him 5 years ago, mm-hmm. to just give up his time during the summer and other times to go over and help people in other places. Mm-hmm. I've done many countries, but quite often I've been lecturing. But Fred has really been working directly with the people and bringing joy and comfort and different things to them.
That's fantastic. And I'm a resident of Alpharetta myself, and I'm familiar with the North Fulton Charities and certainly all the good going on up there. Absolutely. And they just recently dedicated a Veterans Memorial at their city hall.
They sure did.
Yeah. And I've driven by there a couple times. I haven't got out and really inspected, and I want to, but it depicts some modern era soldiers. And I think that's really cool. So they're giving thanks to the most recent conflicts that our men and women have been involved in.
I was actually at Alpharetta's and John's Creek.
Oh, yeah. That's right. They did a brick, a wall of some bricks on the walk out there. Just think that's great what they're doing up there. So and now
that's how it gets back to your original question about this country. Here, we're in Georgia. I started out in South Carolina. Things were completely separate, discriminatory and everything. But here you look at Georgia, community in Georgia. A group of people working together to help other countries and this country, a mixed group, not just all black or all mm-hmm. white, but Americans helping other people. This is the beauty of this country and how it's come in those 90 years that I've been on the face of the earth. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes me so proud, because what you're doing,
right.
what Fred is doing and so forth.
The gentlemen like yourself, though, are the ones that inspire guys like me and to continue. But for a guy like yourself who's been in Atlanta for many years, let's talk about the changes you've seen through the years and how Atlanta is really leading this charge of integrating society and everybody's equal. And that's from my perspective. What are your thoughts along those lines?
Well, it's interesting. Years ago, I was out in Los Angeles. Martin Luther King was out there, and I knew him, so I was out campaigning with him and so forth. And we were joined by this young fellow who was his assistant. His name was Andy Young.
Yes.
And coming back, Martin and his previous babysitter, whose name is Thomas Kilgore, who was an assistant over at Ebenezer Church, was sitting in the front seat, and Andy and I were the two number twos sitting in the back. Just think, years later, he's in the Congress. And one of the first things Andy does is to invite me over for breakfast with him in the Congress. Later on, we were out on other places, and still later he was impressed by my being ambassador, and he became ambassador to the UN. Mm-hmm. By the time I moved down to Atlanta, guess who was mayor?
Your old friend Andy.
Andy Young. And I saw him this morning, by the way. So it's just that these things continue to change. They continue to inspire me because I see from where I'm a history buff, and I always say, if we are successful in what we do, what will be different? Okay, I started off in 1925 when things were completely different, but look where they are now. And I can look back at, say, a person like Andy and say, look where you are now. Yes. As compared to where I was years ago.
And look at our fine city of Atlanta, where it was, it is now, and where it's headed.
Yes.
I'm a third generation Atlantan myself. Mm-hmm. My dad and my granddad both grew up in Decatur, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I'm very fond of the city, and I've traveled the world myself and told people about Atlanta, and very proud to be a son of this great city.
Well, I'm grateful to them, but both the DeKalb County Commission and the city of Atlanta have honored me, so I have good reason to be grateful that they appreciate my being here.
Yes, I know they do, for sure. And let's look ahead to 2016. Other than getting this monument and memorial erected and getting the funds secured and getting the construction underway, what are some other things that you're looking for, maybe events or places or people you're looking forward to in 2016?
Let me take a quick one. Fred's going to come to it. You know, there is a Marine, an African-American Marine, who was buried along the highway, Interstate 75 in Macon, Georgia.
Why is that?
He's the only African-American holder of the Medal of Honor from the Marine Corps. He's buried there. When one goes down 75, one can look up alongside and see a huge USMC sign and lights on 24 hours a day and flags flying to honor this particular person. Our guys go down once a year to help clean up that burial site. It's a part of an old African-American cemetery. They go down there once a year to help clean it up. But in addition, our guys are active, and Fred here is one of them, very active in what we call stand down with the VA. Homeless veterans and non-homeless veterans who need help come to the VA en masse on this day, and they get all kinds of support, whether it be from tickets on the metro to haircuts to examinations, all kinds that they're looking after. But so many things are also on the agenda for doing during the summer. Mm-hmm. But I don't take it all from Fred. Fred, by the way, he's our second president of the chapter in the late years down here that I've been here. Plus, he's now the senior regional vice president for all of the chapters.
Yeah, okay.
For the South.
Yeah, quite involved, and certainly got your ear to what's going on nationally when it comes to with the Montfort Point Marines Association. And from your perspective, 2016, what are some things you're looking forward to?
Well, Ryan, we definitely want to continue to grow our membership. And our membership includes all military personnel. Again, I want to repeat that. All military personnel.
And sexes.
Okay.
Right. Doesn't matter what color you are. Doesn't matter what branch of service you serve in, as long as you receive an honorable discharge.
Okay.
It is open to everyone. So that is our main focus. to grow membership.
Get membership. And so people can go to their website for more information about membership, MontfortPointMarines.com.
That's correct.
To get information about the...
.org.
.org, excuse me. But then again, they can sign up in different levels of membership, right?
That's correct. Of course, if they want to contact me, they can do that. And I can get them in contact with whatever chapter they are. I mean, as an ambassador said, I'm the Southern Regional Vice President. So, and if someone doesn't live in those areas, we will get them connected to a chapter. We do have 42 chapters throughout the country within our association. And I want to piggyback on what Ambassador Britton said. I mean, going forward this year, one of our initiatives as well, we want to get more involved as well with veterans that do need care and do need help to really try to put them in the right direction, because a lot of them don't. And as you said, you are an Iraqi war veteran. You still have a lot of them out there. My son, my oldest son, was in the Battle of Fallujah. Came back from that. Then he was in Ramadi. So we know what those actions are all about. Some of them are not coping well. Thankfully, he is. But a lot of them aren't.
You're absolutely right. I know men personally who are struggling a little bit.
You yourself are a Purple Heart recipient.
Sir.
Not that you win a Purple Heart.
That's right.
You hope that you never have to get one, but the fact that you have suffered through that, Brian, my hat's off to you.
No, Ryan. Yes, sir. And thank you so much for the recognition there. And I like to give back to the veterans myself. And now that I have a radio show and a platform to make that happen a couple times a year, if not more, I like to do special episodes featuring veterans, as we are here today. But I do want to thank first on air, Mr. Coates, for reaching out to me to making this happen. I'm so glad
you
did to have you in here to tell your story. But looking forward for me personally in 2016, more shows about veterans, more outreach, more help, how they can be entrepreneurs and get them involved in the business side of things. And just, again, recognizing them for their dedication to country and service around the world.
Absolutely.
And so we're excited about that in 2016. So make sure, listeners, you stay tuned here in Atlanta Business Radio for more information on that. We've got quite a lineup of guests and show concepts coming to you in 2016, so stay tuned for that. And before we leave here today, we'd like to revisit here some more of the highlights from the show here today. And again, Ambassador Britton, Montfort Point Marines, one of the originals, and you are the reason the association is striving today, I would think. And then Mr. Coates, guys like you, the reason you're picking up the torch and running with it, and hopefully somebody in the following generation can continue for that. So we're excited for the memorial to be up and running. And so if you have a big announcement on that, please come back and be a guest on the program and share with us and our listeners. If you reach that milestone of all the money's raised, we'd love to have a celebratory episode of Atlanta Business Radio featuring you gentlemen there. So any final thoughts from you, Mr. Coates, that you want to leave with our listeners here before we leave today?
Well, Ryan, first of all, thanks a lot for having us on. And as you said, to have this medium where you can really speak to the public and let them know some of the things that you're doing. First and foremost, our originals are folks that we really, really are targeting right now, because they are up there in age. We had 12 in our Atlanta chapter. We just buried one today. Now we have 11. The youngest is 90. The oldest is 95. So we're going to ratchet up all and everything we possibly can to take care of them, make sure that whatever they need is taken care of. But at the same token, as I said, to grow our base, and to get other military personnel involved in our efforts.
Well, we're here to support you in that. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule. Continue the good work, and let's stay in touch for sure so we can continue to get the word out to the people about the Montfort Marines Association and the legacy that they have set forth. And we must always remember and never forget their sacrifices. So thank you so much, Mr. Coates. And Ambassador Britton, final thoughts or comments for you? The microphone is yours.
Okay. One of the things that keep coming to me is the number 3 general in the entire U.S. Marine Corps recently retired. He lives over in Alabama. he's African American.
Okay.
Which shows how far we, his name is Lieutenant General Willie Williams.
Okay.
To show how far we have gone. But then to show how some of the other fellas have gone, one who came into the Marine Corps in the 1960s, years after, almost 20 years after I got out, retired from the Marine Corps as a Major General. He lives in Mobile, Alabama. But he was also appointed as Assistant Secretary of the Air Force and later on a U.S. Ambassador. So we have some very great stars out there who have count their legacy towards us old-timers. Mm-hmm. But my hat's off to them for what they have been able to do as well, especially the General Williams, who really, in a sense, had to run the Marine Corps for the Commandant.
You're right. And what an achievement for him, and a testament to the times that we're living in today. And certainly we all your words resonate with myself personally, and I know our listeners have found very fascinating about your story. And if folks want to learn more about Ambassador Britton, you can go to his website, ambassadorbritton.com. I spell B-R-I-T-T-O-N. And you can learn all about him and get involved in his initiatives and stay connected with him there as well. So thank you so much, Ambassador.
Thank you.
My pleasure. And remind our listeners that you can go to our website, atlantabusinessradio.com, and find out all the information about today's studio guests. And if your company or organization is out there doing something to genuinely serve your community, reach out to us directly on the Business Radio X webpage at businessradiox.com. Thank you to Stone Pate and Lee Cantor. And on behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network, I'm Ryan Red Hawk McPherson. We will see you on the radio.